to places to sleep. In every episode, I read the place descriptions from different works of fiction, and I invite you to set a sleep timer and drift off. That's it, really. Tonight's places come from Volume 1 of Rolled and Told, which is a compilation of adventures featuring 4 pre-made characters, 4 Dungeons & Dragons, put out by Quillian and Lionforge. They've been putting out this series as comic books. Each one has a one-shot, and the characters level up with the one-shots. And the art is really, really beautiful. So I will be reading some of the place descriptions from Volume 1 that collects the first 6 issues of the Rolled and Told comic. So set your sleep timer, allow yourself to visualize if that's your jam, and drift off to sleep. First place from the 3rd issue called Pull Your Weight. The world is falling apart. First came tremors, then earthquakes, then breaks in the earth. The citizens of Desik awoke to find their town floating 2 meters above the rest of the land. If the breakup of the world was slower, perhaps it could have been thwarted. If the palace of Monarch Maripos hadn't been torn in half, killing many of the leaders, maybe the denizens of the world wouldn't have flown into a hopeless panic. Alas, parts of the earth broke free from the rest, drifting up into the sky. Only those who were already panicked and flexible adapted to the quickly changing terrain. Many of them were the shady individuals already accustomed to the ephemerality of rules and laws, and ruthless enough to adapt. And so, the first floating ships were made. Some of the floating islands can be used to lift ships, much like hot air balloons. Others, more innovative, have crafted engines which use processed stone. By extracting the essence that makes the earth float, they give their ships an edge and more maneuverability. Occasionally, chunks of stone float through the many random portals to the plane of air. These portals started to show up when the world began to shatter. The stones from the plane of air are the best, purest form of fuel, but their potency degrades over time once they're brought to the material plane. Which is more infamous? The Gossamer Cutlass, the sleek, framed airship which cuts through clouds like a sharpened scimitar, or its captain, Yosu Nube, over 6 feet tall, skin like night with pale freckles splashed across her face like the starry road. The Gossamer Cutlass is said to have once attacked 6 ships from sundown to sunup, plundering their holds and leaving every captive hanging off the sides of their ships. Yosu Nube is said to be bald and wears a gorgeous wig spun of cider silk. She's so skilled with the sword, she can cut storm clouds in half and send their lightning scattering. Those who remain on the unsteady earth throw words of cursing and wonder upwards whenever the Gossamer Cutlass emerges from the clouds. The Gossamer Cutlass navigates to an outcropping of floating islands guarded by several crew members. What they are really guarding is access to a portal to the plane of air. Nube pulls out her weapon, a fan of feathers pulled from birdfolk. With one beat of the fan, a swirl of clouds manifests, the clean, pure smell of ozone wafting through. With a gesture of her hand, Nube invites the party to leap. On the other side of the portal is the plane of air. You gently tumble across land, light, powdery, and brown. Thick-leaved air plants spread across the surface of the hunks of land on all sides. Also visible are the straight sides of the rocks that have been harvested. They've been cleaved clean with silvery blue veins of elemental energy snaking through the powdery brown earth. The stone beneath your feet comes apart easily. Care must be taken to carve the stone so it doesn't crumble underneath you. The work of cleaving the rock is tedious, as the plants must be moved to expose the stone underneath. The sound of metallic tools against stone seems to be drowned out by the whistling wind. The scene is unnerving, an endless void of mostly empty space. The small outcropping of stones you find yourself on is the only land you see. The world fades from blue sky to white oblivion, clouds racing by on invisible currents. Looking down, there's only the gape of air, endless and cold. At times, chittering can be heard on the wind. Laughter. Perhaps the sailors are correct, and the wind is not kind. Mage School, Beyond the Mirror. The town of Wildmere is a quiet place on the edge of a salt marsh that stretches for miles. Lanterns glitter from windows at night, and strange ornaments decorate doorways. Shops close well before sunset, and those who wander out after dark travel in groups, singing loudly against the winds that come from the bog. Fairy lights and wild sounds drift on those breezes from the long shadows. Beside the hearths, kept blazing until all are in bed, strange stories are whispered about those who were lured away. Those like the children at that bizarre warlock school for wizards. Young people kept locked away to serve in the seely and unseely courts until they can be reunited with the objects that hold their souls. You awaken, head still swimming with stories of fairy courts and objects to safeguard souls, at the inn, to a letter on your bedside table. The note is wrapped around an opal worth 10 silver pieces and says the following. Please help. I never wanted to go to school. I never wanted to be a wizard. Now we can't leave. Evelina. Lemonis's High Marks Academy of Magic is tucked into a stretch of forest on the edge of the salt marsh. It is stone and mortar inside a timber frame. The ancient tower it was built into can be viewed above the thin and twisting trees from the marshland. The dock before the school has crumbled into the water, though the supporting poles can still be seen. There are two doors to the school. The front is barred from the inside. Around the back of the school, there's a door to the cellar. Moss has begun to creep up the doors, but with enough pressure, the adventurers are able to pry them open. The smell of brackish water and rot greets you from the pitch-black space beyond. The sound of tripping and water gently lapping can be heard from beneath the house. Across the subterranean room, there is a set of stone stairs leading to an empty doorway. This brings you to the freezing cold vestibule of the school. The floorboards creak and groan under each step. The walls have long dusted over candles in rusted sconces. The room is 20 feet across from the stairway and barred front door. One doorway and a curtain are on the opposite wall. The doorway leads to a dormitory with a hearth blackened from its last fire, but dusted over, and 16 beds, all perfectly made. Each bed has a mundane willow wand on its pillow. Four of them have a slate with a name written on it in childish handwriting. The names are Tasha, Carlisle, Fenton, and Evelina. Upon touching the curtain in the entryway, the candles in the room all light. Upon drawing it back, you see yourself standing in a fantastically lit great hall. There's a table piled high with food and glittering with metal plates and dishes. Candles glimmer from every nook of the stone walls, and low braziers warm and light the lower level. A balcony can be seen lining the room above, with tapestries of forest scenes peeking over the railings. When you turn around, you find yourself in the mirrored room. The mirror, showing the dark and shabby vestibule from before, is at your back. The adventurers have now entered the school given to Lemonis by his archfey patron. Adventurers must look in the mirror to enter the wizard school. They will not be able to return to the material plane through this mirror. There are windows to the lower level. When looking out of these, they will see the swamp outside, and it will remain dusk as long as they remain in Lemonis. The laboratory is littered with clay vessels, stoneware, and the odd glass item. Red piping, caked with strangely hued mixtures, still drip into pots. A shelf along one wall holds sealed jars with Lemonis's special brew painted across them. There are a couple of crates half filled with these jars in a corner. Dried herbs hanging from racks and tinctures in boiling pots add their aromas to the air. Classroom. Shelves line the walls with spell components, from tightly bound gatherings of herbs to insect carcasses. Enlarged rodent skeletons are mounted beside delicately crafted music instruments. Headmaster's office. There is a sign above the farthest doorway on the right from the stairs, painted with the word Headmaster. The room inside contains a desk piled high with papers, a chair, a bookcase whose shelves slump with the weight of the volumes on them, and a fine, life-sized painting of Lemonis in a sylvan glade, kneeling before a veiled woman just all in silvery gray. A golden sun is mostly set behind her. Tower. Lights glow from alien orbs hanging just out of reach. A staircase built from bricks along the curving wall spirals up into the gloom. As you climb, more orbs light, and those below blink out. Thick spider webs coat the surfaces of the wall and stairs. At the top of the stairs is a trapdoor. Leaving the school / Fey Pocket. The yard is enclosed by a 10-12-foot stone wall. A twisting tree winds itself over a crystal clear pond. Your adventure to the land of Fey and wild magic is at an end. You remember something of eldritch magics and weird lights, but the details of your trials there and the exact character of Luminous's school are lost to you. The three children must now be returned to Wildmere to seek out whatever distant family they may have left, though long years they cannot quite recall have separated them. While your memories may not have held up, adventure is still not a loss. Glinting from the forest floor, you find an opal glimmering as if absorbing the moon's pale light. The last place is called the Ruins of the Worm. Pick a mountain range in your world. North and icy works best, in my opinion. As your players trudge through the trying terrain and make their way up the mountainside, they'll find a small mesa, a platform about 20 feet in diameter, nestled up along the mountainside, hiding a small cave. Here's a good place to stash a clue for a quest, or a simple ambush from a group of weaker foes like crypt robbers, bandits, or kobolds. It's only a short 400 to 500 foot trek down the cave's narrow tunnel to the inside of the mountain's hidden depths, where faint light drifts down through icy or rocky holes in the mountaintop, revealing the ruins of the temple. Built millennia ago by a cult of dragon worshippers that fits neatly into your world's personal history, the Temple of the Great North Wind was designed to channel the power of a mighty worm. This worm was supposedly as fickle and mysterious as the wind itself, its followers ranging from necromancers to noble zealots in awe of dragonkind, depending on the legend. The internal chamber containing the temple, hewn of igneous rock and ancient iron, spans a good 300 feet in either direction, and while the highest rubble of the ceiling reaches only 70 or 80 feet, the ceiling of the cavern is easily 200. After climbing the narrow pass into the temple's chamber, your players stand at the base of the ruined stone path that leads to the actual ruins. Before them, it looms, a vast, decaying monolith, the color of ash, with crumbling parapets, once the shape of dragon's claws, antechambers with caved-in roofs that might have seemed folded wings, and the promise of many hidden rooms and passages, the faint glimmer of obsidian and gems among the sharp stone rubble. A massive jet-black statue of the great north wind itself is there to greet them, once coated with gems and now faded by time, but nonetheless magnificent, the outstretched wings worn and the claws chipped, but the figure intimidating all the same. Carved into the statue's base, in Draconic, is its name, and this may be the first time your players learn it. Great North Wind. The authors of tonight's places were Tristan J. Tarwater, who wrote Pull Your Weight, Josephine Yanisak, who wrote Mage School Beyond the Mirror, and Ryan Cady, who wrote Sights and Settings, Ruins of the Worm. Volume 1 of Rolled and Told was just published this year, in 2019. Thank you for listening to Places to Sleep. I hope that you've been able to drift off along the way, but if you haven't, that's okay too. I hope that sometime soon you will find the perfect place to sleep, or just enjoy seeing it in your mind. If you've made it this far and you're still awake and you would like to get in touch with me, you're welcome to send me a message on Twitter at Places to Sleep. That's Places, the number 2, Sleep. Good night.